Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
And good day, good afternoon, welcome to Backbeat Radio, Backbeat Word on the Street, and a whole lot of music news coming your way today. I'm your host, Jay Cruz. It's the month of March, March 5th, 2025, and doing a live show today. A lot of times I do like to pre-record the shows, give me a little more flexibility, especially when we schedule guests, but had a few other things planned and didn't get them in motion quite yet. Just the first couple of months have been a little tough getting in rhythm in 2025 in Los Angeles. January was completely thrown off with the wildfires in Pacific Palisades and a lot of extracurricular activity and things off to a bit of a strange rhythm. So we're, you know, kind of coming in out of a slump coming into the beginning of the season. But as baseball season is starting, we're hoping to hit our spring training groove and be batting full swing and hitting a good Hall of Fame clip pretty soon. Speaking of Hall of Fame, that was an unplanned segue, but it worked. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees have been announced for 2025. Going to talk about them a little bit. Not going to go too deep into it. It's a pretty good class this year with maybe at least one exception. You know, you could maybe put in a few others, but there's one person should not be on the list. Other than that, I think they're all pretty deserving. Going to get to a lot of music news, current stuff going on, and talk about a whole lot of documentaries, going to talk a little bit about the Becoming Led Zeppelin documentary. Happened to see that in theaters. There apparently is a lot of other documentaries in the works. We'll kind of look into them and a list of some documentaries that are currently online. There's a Van Halen documentary currently planned and in the works, and some other stuff, too, that I've seen rumored but haven't seen official release dates yet. But Metallica and Oasis, a couple bands' documentaries supposedly coming to Netflix. And currently right now, some documentaries going on Hulu that I would suggest. There's the new one on Sly Stone that just came out in middle of February. There's one that's been around for a little while on original founding member of the Rolling Stones, Brian Jones, also on Hulu, and kind of an interesting one for studio heads like myself, one with Rick Rubin and Paul McCartney, where Rick Rubin didn't bother putting on his Sunday best. Let's leave it at that. But an interesting conversation on Paul's bass parts and some Beatles stuff early on back in the day. So let's get on to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees for 2025. I think many of these bands really should be in. I mean, they're all pretty respectable bands, and I actually kind of judge it on, do I have an album or not by these bands in my record collection? Sure, I may have listened to them growing up on the radio and know about them, but there's a lot of bands I didn't buy albums or CDs from. So anyway, the list of nominees for 2025. Can't believe this band is not in there quite yet. Bad Company. One of the early supergroups of the 70s. Paul Rogers. Just a classic, sturdy, classic bluesy rock and roll voice. Raspy. Great singer. Played a guitar, piano, and great writer for Bad Company. Also a lot of solo stuff. And, you know, was a member of Free before that, as was Bad Company drummer Simon Kirk. Mick Ralphs was from Mott the Hoople, and Boz Burrell had a cup of coffee with King Crimson, and apparently had only been playing bass about 18 months when he got the gig in Bad Company, which is interesting, because I find him a pretty interesting player. Very tasty bass grooves from one Boz Burrell. Anyway, Bad Company is nominated. The Black Crowes have been nominated. They've had a lot of ups and downs and some breakups, as bands will have. And, you know, I think at some point all good bands do kind of break up or go through the ebbs and flow. The Black Crowes, they came out in the very early 90s. Their last album that came out last year called Happiness Bastards, after they had reformed. You know, Chris Robinson doing his solo thing with the Chris Robinson Brotherhood. And his brother Rich had kind of a number of ex-Crows members in a band called As the Crow Flies. Rich Robinson's band was the better of the two. You know, Chris had the voice of the Black Crowes, but his band was more a bunch of hippies playing a bunch of small micro brews up and down the coast of California, Oregon, and Washington, and driving into places like Colorado, driving around in vans, keeping it as DIY as you can, and sounded a lot like the Grateful Dead. Meanwhile, Rich Robinson's band, a little more progressive, and elements of Zappa and Santana kind of going on, and way more of a jam band. Anyway, they buried the hatchet, got back together, and the album they came out with last year, almost as good as the first two albums, Shake Your Money Maker and Southern Harmony and Musical Companion. Happiness Bastards is the album that came out last year, and it kind of made up for a lot of lost time from, A, the band being broken up and doing solo stuff, and B, just some of the best material they had done in a while. So they are nominated. Nominee number three, I said there was one person on this list that should not be here. This is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and there's a lot of controversy and hullabaloo about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and people and their definitions of what is and what not is not rock and roll. Now, a lot of that has to do with some of the fact that there have been some pop elements that have got in, popular bands, if you will, and a lot of rap, gangster rap. Bands like NWA and Public Enemy have got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and arguably deserve to be there in many cases. They broke ground, they set new boundaries, and were quite influential in creating other people to follow them. Now, are they a classic band with guitars like rock and roll? Well, Little Richard played a piano, but it was the attitude, and it was the influence. And anyway, it's a great thing to have. You know, the Hall of Fame is something guaranteed to, you know, be a conversation never ending and never agreed upon. We're talking Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame. Just heard that Charlie Hustle is going to be, what's that word the president's been throwing around? He's going to be pardoned for his gambling on baseball, and due to that, might be going into the Hall of Fame. And of course, once the president laid down his verdict on that, Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred, who's seemingly just willing to change everything about the game, decided they're going to reinvestigate the Pete Rose thing too. So, the person on the list that maybe doesn't belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Mariah Carey. She's now become, you know, the Christmas singer that we seem to, well, we start seeing memes about Mariah Carey is, you know, like around October in a Christmas outfit, and she's become the Christmas thing. That's great. Power to you. Christmas music is not rock and roll, with the exception of the Kinks' Father Christmas, because they're the Kinks. And that's a song with plenty of attitude and rock and roll. Mariah Carey, she might get in, because she's popular. But rock and roll? No. Moving on, Chubby Checker. He was famous for innovation of the twists when rock and roll was about dancing and, you know, kind of pop records, but it was the early stages of rock and roll. Chubby Checker, yeah, he gets in. He gets a pass. He's good. Joe Cocker. Just his Woodstock performance alone, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And for folks like me who are fans of comedy, especially John Belushi, the fact that John Belushi did an impersonation of Joe Cocker with Joe Cocker on stage next to John Belushi live on Saturday Night Live, double Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for that. Billy Idol, yeah, he deserves to be in. Billy Idol, he had a band called Generation X before his solo career. And among other things, from reading Billy Idol's biography that came out a couple years ago, I had no idea he was, he was a heroin addict all those years. You know that Billy Idol sneer? Apparently, it was partly induced because of his choice in pharmaceuticals. He chose to snort and not shoot heroin. Maybe that kept him from overdosing. One time in that book, they talk about him going to, can't remember if it was Thailand or the Philippines. I've seen a video that said it was the Philippines. I think the book said it was Thailand. Either way, you know, it's one of those countries you go to where you think you can get away with anything. And Billy Idol went to one of those two countries. Again, I believe it was Thailand. I could be wrong, but it's in his biography. And if you want to read it, but you probably don't because I'm going to tell you the story right now. Anyway, he was on such a bender of various substances that the government decided to come to his hotel room at gunpoint, got him up and at him, walking, bags packed, strapped to a gurney, you know, that the Wheel Hospital people, patients are on, and at gunpoint, put him in a locked up, strapped on gurney onto an airplane back to the USA. So, so he's definitely lived the rock and roll lifestyle. And, you know, he had a pretty famous motorcycle accident near the Chateau Marmont. And speaking of him and John Belushi, apparently from that book, Billy Idol was at the Chateau Marmont doing his own thing when he heard a bunch of sirens back on the day that John Belushi died. He thought they were coming after him. Interesting, he's still around, and he deserves to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Great songs, besides the extracurricular activity. Joy Division and New Order, kind of a bit of a combo platter. Very influential band in the, you know, the emo crowd is into them, goth. Their singer, Ian Curtis, he killed himself by hanging the day that Joy Division was all set to go on a U.S. tour. Yeah, interesting timing, and certainly put a damper on the future and present of Joy Division by doing that. What they did soon after was they reformed and changed a little bit and became the band known as New Order. And they should be in the Hall of Fame. Influential band. Cyndi Lauper, some people could say, well, if you slam Mariah Carey out of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, how does Cyndi Lauper get a pass? Actually, quite influential in the early MTV era, and songs have stood the test of time, hasn't become a caricature of herself, just doing, you know, Christmas songs, and quite influential. Cyndi Lauper, yeah, she gets a pass. I don't know if she's going to win in the vote coming up, but it's possible. I believe they're from Mexico. They're called Mana. And for those that have not checked out Rock en Español, it's pretty cool. I remember in San Jose, before moving to Los Angeles, both, of course, areas rich with Hispanic culture and Hispanic music of all types, including rock and Espanol. A friend of mine who, a radio colleague, knew another radio colleague, as colleagues do, know each other in the industry. And she worked in a Spanish broadcasting radio station, but was bilingual and had told my friend, Jesse, about the couple bands, and she was into promoting some of the rock and Espanol bands. So he goes, hey, man, you want to go check them out? And I'm like, he goes, these bands are really good. They just sing in Spanish. And I'm like, I don't really speak much Spanish, if at all. But, you know, I've heard some of the songs and a couple of bands, and I'm like, yeah, go check it out. I just, you know, I was a little apprehensive about going to a Spanish-speaking club. Turned out it wasn't a problem at all. Nearly everyone was bilingual. You know, this is the USA, and, you know, for the most part, almost 95% of the people bilingual and speaking English. you know. And I don't really, you know, follow it much, but when I do hear it, I appreciate it, and I appreciate the fans from Mexico and Latin America, and just the number of musicians that have come from Mexico and Latin America playing rock and roll, and their passion for rock and roll is undeniable and a great thing. It's kind of heartwarming. So Mana is up for nomination, and yeah, I think they deserve to be in. If you've listened to Backbeat Radio for any length of time in the past, you know my love for this next band, Oasis, is undeniable. You know, they do have some detractors, probably not so much for their music, but probably more for the Gallagher brothers' attitude. They, especially Liam, he's got the switch inside that just says rock star on, rock star off. Apparently, it does not go back to rock star off. Now, Noel, he's a little more level-headed. He is the songwriter in Oasis. He wrote pretty much all the songs and has done some interesting solo stuff as well. The brothers, who famously broke up back in 2010, when Liam threw a guitar at Noel and Noel decided, I'm out of here. Yeah, they finally buried the hatchet just last year, 2024. They have a big reunion tour coming up, scheduled to start coming up in just a few months. They're going to start rehearsing. Now, you know, I thought they would have been rehearsing already, but, you know, they know the songs. Liam has been playing many of the songs in his last number of solo excursions, you know, and he's had a pretty good, so they both had, both the Gallagher brothers have had really good solo careers as well. And in a way, I was even kind of like, man, if they get back together, groovy. If they don't, yeah, still groovy. I got the access to the music, and I saw them, you know, back in the day. And, you know, met them at radio station things. In fact, Chris Robinson mentioned him and Black Crowes, same show, mentioned. They met both those bands at the same time, both with, you know, bands with fighting brothers. But they decided to bury the hatchet. I'm sure a big pile of money had a lot to do with that. And they sold out a world tour pretty quick. Now, they're not playing every single city. They're playing about like 7 or 8 cities in North America, if that. Two of them happen to be in Los Angeles on the weekend of September 6th and 7th. Now, it's not quite Labor Day weekend. The way it works out, Labor Day weekend's the weekend before, but is my birthday, September the 6th. Now, that show sold out really quick, but they had September the 7th and was able to get tickets for that, meaning I can somehow maybe still acquire tickets for the show before the show I have the tickets for. Oasis, I think, anyway, currently with fan voting, they're not one of the bands to get in, but I think they deserve it, even though the Gallagher brothers have both separately and probably together say they don't give a rat's patootie about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There's a lot of rock and roll bands that don't, that aren't in there. Even some that are in. Again, there's a lot of controversy about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and this next band might invoke some of that as well. I'm not going to get any very controversial about it, but I'm sure people have seen the name Outkast and were outraged. You know, Outkast, I remember early 2000s, KROQ was playing. Outkast had this amazing double album that I can't remember the name of it offhand. I'm just having one of those moments. But that song was everywhere, you know, and you, my baby, you know, can't remember the name of it, but it was everywhere. And I remember actually people here in Los Angeles were going, what the hell is K-Rock playing this dance rap crap for? It turned out that album sold a lot, and whether that has to do with albums being played a lot and getting a lot of airplay or not having to do with it, because at some point I remember a lot of friends that were like very anti-Outkast and didn't like hearing that song on K-Rock were like, you know, after a couple weeks, this song's starting to grow on me. I think Andre, 3000 is his stage name. He's a great performer and a hell of an actor. He did perform in the Jimi Hendrix biography that, quite honestly, I'm talking about a whole lot of biographies today, and I did not see his Hendrix performance, but I remember I knew some people that were working on the set, and they're going, you know, we're not supposed to say anything, and I'm not really saying anything, but when you see Andre as Jimmy, he's just like, he is just channeling Jimmy. So there were some people that felt that was going on. Outkast, I don't know. I don't have a problem with them getting in. They had a huge run, big album, influential, interesting band. Fish, spelt with a P. Basically, Grateful Dead light, influenced by the Grateful Dead. And, you know, a band that is considered jam band, where it's not so much the pop song structure. Won't be confused with anything in the Mariah Carey or the Chevy Checker or even the Oasis songbook. But Fish, quite popular. I think they've had a breakup and a reunion, or a retirement and a reunion. Trey Anastasio, I think, even played with the actual Grateful Dead in the post-Jerry years, or did some shows. Fish, pretty popular. I think they're actually the number one voted by the public band. They have an incredible cult following. I'm personally not so into them, but I'm not going to knock those that are. Soundgarden. I absolutely feel Soundgarden should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Always a band with a lot of critical acclaim, musical credibility, the incredible vocals of Chris Cornell, innovative songs and leaders and flag carriers for all things that was the Seattle scene of grunge. They were the first band to actually be on a label and not, and with the one that made it the biggest the first, but they were signed and playing before Nirvana, before Pearl Jam and Mother Love Bone, that was Green River and all that stuff before it, and the White Stripes. I think Jack White, I always want to call him Jack Black, that's the other guy, a talented guy for a comedian, he can sing his ass off. White Stripes, you know, that Seventh Nation Army song is pretty funny. I do a little part-time Uber driving, and a couple of months back, I was driving this individual who was in high school, and he's going to college, basketball practice, and he was talking about his college preparation, and, you know, he saw my Uber bio that I'm a radio broadcaster, and he's like, that's interesting, and, you know, he was just saying how, you know, a lot of his peers just don't speak very well, and, you know, he's just interested in how radio helps, and I go, it absolutely does. You know, you're trained to speak, and people do judge you by the words you use. If you don't think so, just stop and check in when you're somewhere and you hear somebody talking and you don't get it. Anyway, he was asking about songs that he could suggest to his high school band, and I was like, kind of, well, you know, Seventh Nation Army, and he's like, yeah, and songs kind of played out. Which is funny, because it's like 20 years ago, but it became immediately one of those songs that, you know, high school and college bands started playing. I think the USC marching band might have been one of the first I heard playing it during a college broadcast, college football game broadcast, and certainly not the last. But I remember the Stanford band, speaking of a band that was, Paul Rogers and Free, were the performers of All Right Now. And the Stanford band was pretty progressive for, you know, not doing band standards, but doing, you know, some rock and roll stuff. So if there's a band hall of fame for college bands, you got to put in the Stanford band, except for that one faux pas at the Cal Berkeley game, John Elway's senior year back in 1982, when Stanford scored the go-ahead touchdown. And you know what happened. They kicked off. Cal started running the ball back, and the Stanford band somehow decided to run out onto the field. But nonetheless, we're kind of going all over the place. That was going to be a 10-minute segment, and it went a little over 20. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees for 2025. I'm Jay Cruz, Backbeat Word on the Street today on Backbeat Radio. We'll be right back.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? Would you feel scared or proud? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Would you rather make your own way? I spend a lifetime saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
Roku is like having your own video library with over 300,000 choices. And it's the best way to get Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, and so much more. There's a Roku player for every budget, so go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on the Roku banner.
And welcome back. Backbeat Radio, Backbeat Word on the Street, a whole lot of music news. If you missed the beginning of the show and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 2025 nominees, you can always go to the podcast on-demand link here on HealthyLife.net. And if you listen to our other shows and you enjoy a host and kind of dig their vibe, you can always do that and check out their archive page. Going on with some music news. This next story, pretty sad. It involves, tragically, a death of somebody that you probably have not have heard of, but she was an associate of someone you may have heard of. Her name, Kimberly Burch, fiancée of Faster Pussycat frontman Tammy Down. She has died after going overboard on the first night of something called the 80s Cruise, a nostalgia-themed music cruise featuring performances from bands from the 80s. Obviously, Faster Pussycat, Warrant, Dokken, Firehouse, Squeeze, Adamant, Tiffany, and Men at Work. Interesting that they have the MTV sector of Adamant, Tiffany, Men at Work, and the Sunset Strip people. Faster Pussycat, Warrant, Dokken, Firehose. Not sure how Squeeze fits, and I think they played in L.A. like on Monday night, so maybe there's two versions of Squeeze, or maybe they didn't play at one of the two places. Interesting, for the purpose of the information that has been compiled and put together in a news format by TMZ, I happen to be scrolling through Facebook, and a person I personally know, we're on friends list, although, you know, when you're on a Facebook and you've got acquaintances, you've got friends, and then you've got people you know, and, you know, people who promote themselves and things like that. So someone I'm friendly with who's an acquaintance, but he, you know, knows the individual involved well and was saying, hey, I just hope this news isn't true. And someone who ended up, you know, actually reporting on some other sites, you know, got a lot of the information from the Facebook chat. It was just interesting to see it have gone that way, how someone got a scoop from a Facebook thing. Anyway, and then the story came out through TMZ, and it was on the Royal Caribbean Explorer, 11 p.m. on March 3rd. That was Monday night. And they launched a search involving the ship's crew, two nearby vessels, but Burch was not found. Now, her mother, Carnell Burch, told reporters, TMZ, that her daughter had been involved in a heated argument with Tammy Down before going overboard. However, she emphasized that Kimberly wouldn't purposefully hurt herself. Authorities have not yet confirmed whether she fell accidentally or jumped. Spokesperson for Royal Caribbean Group told authorities the crew immediately launched a search and rescue effort, has been working with local authorities, and we are providing support and assistance to the guest family during this difficult time. To respect the privacy of our guest family, we have no additional details to share. And Yeah, for those that don't know, Faster Pussycat formed in the mid-80s, became one of the bands synonymous with the glam metal Sunset Strip era, selling over 2 million albums worldwide. I didn't buy one, but I knew of them. And they toured with some of the bigger names, Alice Cooper, Ozzy Osbourne, Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses, and Kiss. Sad news, and a side note on Tame Me Down and the whole 80s Sunset Strip. I believe it's called Nothing But a Good Time. A Poison song, and that's a documentary on Paramount Plus, a three-part documentary that I think is worth checking out. And it mentions Tamey, who he was more famous, honestly, for being part owner with Ricky Rockman of Headbangers Ball fame. They co-owned a place called the Cat Club, and they talk about the Cat Club, which is, that could be a whole nother documentary in and of itself, because it was the, it was that 80s Sunset Strip kind of scene all the way. I mean, 2 million albums, not too bad. One of those other bands, Motley Crue, won't be launching their upcoming Las Vegas residency as planned this month, with vocalist Vince Neil set to undergo unspecified medical procedure. I'm going to specify I'm going to cough. Thank you for allowing that. Now, the tour, which is originally scheduled to run for 11 shows from March 28th through April 19th. By the way, my band has a show April 19th. You can find out more about that at Five Long Years on Facebook and Instagram. Anyway, that was scheduled to be the final day of the Crue's residency in Vegas. That's now been postponed and moved to later in the year, taking place throughout September and early October instead. Now, according to a statement from the band, the reason for the shift relates to Vince Neil needing to undergo a required medical procedure as according to the doctor's orders. Now, you gotta love, I mean, how old are the guys in Motley Crue? They're in their 60s. I mean, the fans are in their early 60s and 50s, unless they, you know, discovered them later, which, you know, they do have some younger fans. But I don't know if I would ever call myself, even then, but now, I don't know if I'd call myself a crew head. But that's what Vince has called all the fans. I'm just amused by that. To all the crew heads who are looking forward to see us this spring, I'm truly sorry, Neil wrote in the statement. My health is my top priority, so I can bring you the awesome shows you deserve. And I can't wait to return to the stage. Thank you all for all the well wishes that keep reaching me. Your support means more than you know. I mean, I'm glad to see that Vince has taken his health as number one. He's kind of been out of shape for the last number of tours, and there's a number of fans that are critical of the crew for mailing it in, specifically one Vincent Neil. In a joint statement, Nikki Six, Tommy Lee, and John Five, the replacement of Mick Vars, that's a whole nother story, all share their well wishes for Vinny. Please join us in wishing Vince a speedy recovery, they wrote. We're looking forward to him to get well again and take over Vegas together in September. We can't wait to see you all out there, and thank you for your understanding and support in the meantime. Glad to see the brotherly love from the crew, because they've been accused of not being there for each other in the distant past. Some of them have been in and out of jail, in and out of hospitals, and other members of the band didn't bother to visit. Now, this new tour will still take place at Dolby Live at Park MGM, albeit from September 12th to October 3rd instead. Tickets from the original residency dates will remain valid for the new shows, although I don't know about the rest of your tour itinerary. The Motley tour has now been pared down to just 10 shows, with the April 19th performance having been canceled entirely, because they were going to come to our show. Neil's undisclosed medical procedure is the latest misfortune to affect him personally in recent weeks. On February 10th, you may or may not have heard about a plane owned by Vince that was at the center of a fatal crash in Scottsdale, Arizona. Neil was not present at the time of the incident. At 2:39 local time, a Learjet aircraft model 35A owned by Vince Neil was attempting to land at the Scottsdale airport, a statement from Neil's representative, Warwick Robinson IV, read. For reasons unknown at the time, the plane veered from the runway, causing it to collide with another parked plane. On board Mr. Neil's plane were two pilots and two passengers. And there was at least one of them died. Moving ahead, Stephen Stills is opening up about his sobriety journey to how it's benefiting the next stage in his career. At 80, the Love the One You're With singer has been completely sober for the past 3 years and told Rolling Stone in a new interview, "It gets me back to the kid I was before this madness started. Pretty affable and friendly. Things are so special at the beginning of my career before I sold a single record, but then you add poison into that mix, and I'm just glad I have my original personality back." He's also been performing a number of one-off gigs in recent years, and since retiring from the road in 2018, Stills, earlier this year, took to the stage at the Kia Forum alongside many others to help the fire aid relief benefit. Stills revealed he's also working on a memoir. I can't wait to read that, though he admits he's going one word at a time and looking through old newspaper articles to help him remember life events. So I've looked at the issues from my birthdays throughout the years, and it's been pretty helpful since it puts you in that time frame, and suddenly your memories open up. And we are going to wrap up here in a moment. One more story about Pink Floyd, who have shared the new trailer for their remastered Live at Pompeii concert film. It's returning to the big screen, including IMAX, coming soon in April. And I'm hoping for an April 20th day, Easter Sunday, if you know what I mean. The minute-long look at the trailer, Pink Floyd at Pompeii, is rare, and it's a bunch of Roman numerals that basically, I think, mean 1972. A rare and unique document of the band performing live in the period prior to Dark Side of the Moon, drummer Nick Mason said in a statement. I think you can find it online. It's just a cool documentary. They're playing in one of the, you know, the ruins, ancient ruins in Rome, in Pompeii, and they're just out there in the stadium by themselves, and they start in the daytime, and then it gets dark. And it's just cool. If you're a Pink Floyd fan, it's a must-see. And I'm going to have to go see this on the big screen. More of it. Since 1994, I have searched for the elusive rushes of Pink Floyd at Pompeii. So the recent discovery of the 1972 original 35mm cut negative was a very special moment, the band's director of restoration, Lana Topham, said in the statement. The newly restored version presents the full 90-minute cut, combining the 60-minute source edit of the performance with the additional Abbey Road Studios documentary segments, filmed shortly after. Again, going to be pretty cool. The film finds Pink Floyd performing pre-Dark Side of the Moon favorites like Echoes, One of These Days, and Careful With That Axe, Eugene, in the empty Roman amphitheater. Now, you know, when COVID started, I actually posted this going, this is the ultimate definition of social distancing. It's time for a break. I got more things to get to. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about, well, a couple other documentaries, one that's currently in theater, hopefully still playing. It's been out a few weeks, and a couple, one that's out coming up soon. And if time allows, we're going to get into a couple that you can see currently streaming online as well. Jay Cruz, Backbeat Radio, Backbeat Word on the Street, and a whole lot of music news today on HealthyLife.net.
I'm William Shatner, and this is Jimmy. Animals like Jimmy are often left behind by people fleeing hurricanes, fires, floods, and earthquakes. These abandoned animals cannot survive on their own. If you must evacuate your home, please never leave an animal behind. If you absolutely cannot take your animal with you, never leave him helplessly chained or caged. Many animals die because they cannot escape fires or rising waters. Animals need your help. Thank you.
Call PETA today, 757-622-PETA.
See straight and save. These days, everyone seems to see things differently. But from your eyes, you can see straight and save. Right now, get glasses online at 70% off at Glasses USA. There's a 100% guarantee, too, on top brand men, women, multifocal, and even prescription sunglasses. Visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Glasses USA, and you will see straight and save.
To get your message out, social media is great, but if you want to be picked up by major media outlets, let's face it, just using social media makes your chances, well, slim to none. If you want to improve your chances, put your message in the right place. A press release on PR Web. Affordable, easy to use, and with great customer service, there's no reason not to use PR Web. Visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on PR Web now and get started.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
And we're back. Backbeat, word on the street. A whole lot of music news today. A couple of quick updates. My guest in last month's episode, Mayor Redondo Beach Mayor Candidate Joan Irvine, Dr. Joan Irvine. The election in Redondo Beach wrapped up last night, and the initial results came in. She is not at the top, but she's not at the bottom. She's currently a number three position with about another week of votes to be counted. But it would take a lot of interesting ballots on her side to come in to put her over the top. Still, great campaign, something to be proud of, and don't know if she doesn't look like she's going to win, but still proud to have backed Dr. Joan Irvine as my candidate and mayor candidate that I voted for here. And you can still listen to her radio shows here. She's on Wednesday afternoons, 2 o'clock, the 4th Wednesday each and every month, also available on the podcast on demand link. And actually, I posted some quick videos about 15-20 minutes before going on live. Maybe you're listening, maybe that enticed you to tune in. But another guest from a year or so ago named Tatiana Irsay mentioned like a little thumbs up like kind of thing, and said that she's been working on some new music, which I knew about, and, you know, we have talked about having her on the show again. She was on a couple years ago when her last full-length album came out, and she's got some new stuff coming out, including a new single, and she's been promoting and releasing today. You can follow her and find her at TatianaIrsay.com. That's Tatiana, T-A-T-I-A-N-A, Irsay, E-R-S-E.com. All over YouTube and all the groovy social media spots. I don't get to the movies as often as I used to. I still try to watch movies at home. Of course, Netflix, Hulu, and the others. Paramount Plus, Peacock, and I'm a big fan of Tubi. In fact, I don't have cable. I cut the cable cord back in like 2012. So I've been going without that. And the apps do add up, but either way, the amount of apps that I pay for each and every month is still a good 20 to 30 bucks under the cheapest live TV streaming option that's out there. So, and, you know, the pace of films coming to, you know, Netflix and on demand at home digitally so quick nowadays, it kind of makes you wonder, you know, why go see a movie in the theater? Well, I'm a huge Led Zeppelin fan, so if it's going to be, okay, a Quentin Tarantino movie, yeah, I'm going to go see that because I want Hollywood to know that my money is behind Quentin Tarantino movies. So I want him to have a big number on his box office weekend. There you go. That's putting your wallet where your fan and loyalty lies. Same with Led Zeppelin. I know it's going to be on the streaming services pretty soon. Netflix is going to have a whole nother documentary on Zeppelin and Robert Plant as well. But it was a Monday, and I could not sit there knowing that there was a Led Zeppelin movie playing, and I'm not seeing it. So I went on a Monday, and I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. It was very limited, and it did not go throughout the entire career. It didn't get to, you know, the demise of Zeppelin. It was pretty much becoming Led Zeppelin. So it was the first chapter, and basically kind of in the backstory, how they formed, which some people do or don't know. I knew much of it because I've been, again, a fan of them and followed every single thing they've done. and read a number of biographies, Hammer of the Gods with Richard Cole, then Timothy White actually wrote that, who also wrote No One Here Gets Out Alive. Richard Cole later wrote another biography, not as good, because he gave up the best stories for Hammer of the Gods. And, you know, there's some Jimmy Page books that's a little more technical on recording. And word to the wise, the sad thing is we'll get the autobiography on Jimmy Page. He says it won't be released until after his death. Interesting, but that's where he's put that. So he's probably been working on it, and it'll be ready, you know, whenever that day comes. He's around 80 and pretty good health. Anyway, speaking of Page, you know, he was a session guy. He worked on some of the biggest records with basically all the who's who of English musicians. And he goes, and he laughs, and he goes, except the Beatles. He just, the Stones, Van Morrison, the Kinks. He worked on James Bond albums and stuff. And still John Paul Jones did too. You know, they played in the Goldfinger Chorus and stuff like that. So a lot of those stories, it shows Robert Plant and how he and John Bonham were friends early in the day, which you may or may not have known that they, you know, kind of came after, you know, Page was looking for a singer. And it actually plays some of the early stuff by Robert Plant, and they say how it was not that popular, but I listened to it and I go, you know, I think it would have been popular if it got some exposure and airplay and got to see the light of day. And, you know, they talk about their influences, bands that they liked, you know, like Skiffle, which is a popular type of pre-rock and roll stuff. And, of course, the blues, and it's got some great old footage. And just to be in a theater and feel the whole power of Led Zeppelin going, it was amazing. And, you know, again, I knew a lot of the stories, but there's still plenty I did not know. And it was just fun to hear him and see the visuals and of course the musical pieces, you know, all the Zeppelin and all the stuff they grew up on. I mean, there's some great old Yardbirds footage. And I talked about, you know, how the Yardbirds, you know, ended up in San Francisco, and then shortly after that, you know, Jeff Beck wanted to do his own thing. But the Yardbirds are very into like what was known as the San Francisco scene, which is psychedelic and much different from a lot of what else was going on in England at the time. So, and of course, Zeppelin grew from the Yardbirds because the band basically dissolved. Jeff Beck had left and wanted to do his own thing, which actually pre-Led Zeppelin, he put out an album that is pretty much a Led Zeppelin album, the Jeff Beck Group with Rod Stewart on vocals, sounding all bluesy and not the Do You Think I'm Sexy Rod Stewart, and Ron Wood later in the Rolling Stones on bass, one of my favorite bass playing records of all time, which basically, unless you're Johnny Depp and you're playing and you're a guitar player and you're in the same band with Jeff Beck, you better learn how to play the bass, because he's not playing with a second guitarist, although briefly him and Jimmy Page did. Page joined the Yardbirds as a bass player, and it's not really well known, but the other guitarist, Paul Samwell Smith, decided he would switch to bass and let Jimmy switch to guitar. Samwell Smith was guitarist before that. Anyway, it'll be online soon. I'm not sure who's going to get it first, you know, Amazon or Netflix or one of those, but if you're a Zeppelin fan, check it out. If you're a rock and roll fan, check it out. All right, got about 10 more minutes, 12 if I really push it. I'm looking forward to this that I just read about today and trying to find a list of some documentaries. I'm not going to get to all of them, so sorry about that. You might have to research them for yourself. Imagine that. Sorry. But this one I'm going to talk about because I just read the book Brothers by Alex Van Halen that talks about his obviously personal, up-close, and intimate relationship with his brother, one Edward Van Halen. And again, it kind of focuses really on the early years. He doesn't go past the David Lee Roth era, for those that have or have not read that book yet or have maybe read reviews. I suggest reading it if you're a Van Halen fan or, again, fan of music in general. But Netflix is apparently set to release a documentary about Van Halen coming up this year. It's an exciting announcement for music lovers and fans of rock history alike, if I didn't underscore that fact already. Netflix has revealed plans to get this out sometime this year. talking about Van Halen and their groundbreaking music. They were one of the last original bands to come out of the 70s before the kind of the hair metal Sunset Strip thing took over with Motley Crue, Faster Pussycat. And, of course, the larger-than-life personalities, that made Van Halen a influential, one of the most influential bands. Well, that had to do with Edwards' great playing, and everybody else, too. But Van Halen's impact on the music industry, they're going to look into that in the documentary. Can't be overstated, and there are going to be some untold stories coming out in this documentary as well. The legacy of Van Halen formed in 1972 by the brothers Eddie and Alex, who, of course, immigrated together with their family from Holland, the Netherlands, to Pasadena before the forming of the band. Then it became a powerhouse in rock music. They grew up in great classic rock and roll. Edward was a Eric Clapton fan. And Alex was a little older and actually was playing professionally with his father, Jan Van Halen, already at a very young, can't-get-into-the-bars-yet age. And of course, while that was happening, Eddie was just getting more revolutionary on his guitar playing. He eventually came across paths with one I Want to Be a Star, David Lee Roth, who had the charisma and stage presence, again, wanting to be a star more than a singer, in Alex Van Halen's words. Van Halen ended up transforming into one of the most successful and innovative bands of the 70s and 80s. Albums like Van Halen, Van Halen 2, Women and Children First, Diver Down, Fair Warning, and 1984. And then that was the end of the David Lee Roth era. Their sound was a interesting fusion of hard rock, heavy metal, and they had pop sensibilities and great vocal, like Beach Boy type harmonies. And they ended up kind of creating their own wave of music that was in the face of new wave and became more long-lasting for generations to come. Their unique blend of incredible innovation and virtuosity and their fun-loving party energy made them not only a musical force, but a kind of a cultural phenomenon. Their influence extends far beyond the rock world, impacting pop culture, fashion, and even the future of guitar playing. Say, besides Jimi Hendrix, Eddie is probably the most influential guitar player of all time in getting someone to pick it up and give it a shot, at least as far as standing out and just being different from millions of other very good professional and solid musicians on guitar as well. The rise to fame, Van Halen's rise to fame was nothing short of kind of meteoric. I always hate saying that word. It rose fast. But if you ask Alex, it took a little bit longer on the book. In the late 70s, they were under the tutelage of producer Ted Templeman, who helped the band get a record deal with Warner Brothers. Not the best deal if you read Alex's book. Their self-titled debut album, released in 78, was an instant success. It changed my life as far as the music I wanted to listen to and get into when I heard songs like Runnin' with the Devil and Ain't Talking About Love, and just the amazing guitar player that Edward Van Halen is and was. The documentary will also provide a deep dive into the band's early years, which should feature rare stuff. And hey, since Alex compiled a lot of that, getting the book ready, he's probably got it handy and some good stories on. Well, he's been very private, always has been, and has remained staunchly private since the passing of his brother. So it'll be some private stuff, rare stuff, checking out their growth from the local bands on the club scene, putting on the backyard kegger parties, to global stardom. It'll shed light on the struggles, sacrifices, and the creative tensions that kind of get their success going rapidly, as well as the unique chemistry that made the band such a formidable force in the music world. David Lee Roth and the classic lineup at the heart of the band's success was the original lineup, which included David Lee on vocals, Eddie on guitar, Alex Van Halen on drums, and the more important than you realize, Michael Anthony on bass, who's also a great singer and was the band's lead singer before David Lee Roth joined. So the documentary will also explore the tension between the larger-than-life personalities and how they played off each other, both on and off stage. Roth, known for his flamboyant persona and acrobatic performance, he did have a martial art background, brought a sense of theatrics to the band that perfectly complemented Eddie's intricate guitar playing and their unique musicianship. But their relationship was not without its tensions. The band's fame grew, as did the pressure and egos, eventually leading to Dave's departure in 1985. He then formed a pretty kick-ass solo band on his own with one Steve Vai and Billy Sheehan and Greg Bissonette on drums. Now, the documentary will explore that pivotal moment in the band's history and how it shaped their future. The Hagar era after Dave's departure brought in Sammy Hagar, a successful singer in his own right. The band entered a new phase of success. Hagar's more polished vocal style brought different dynamics in the group and a bit more of a musician. His partnership with Eddie resulted in some of the band's most commercially successful albums, 5150 and OU812, and some of the bigger singles, Why Can't This Be Love, When It's Love, a whole lot of songs about love. So the Van Halen documentary will also go into the Hagar years with the creative collaboration between Sammy and Eddie, as well as the internal conflicts. Can't have a Van Halen documentary without those. It's going to get into the Van Halen sound, Eddie's guitar legacy, the tapping, focusing on his contributions to the world of music, highlighting his creative process and his influence on countless guitarists and personal struggles and triumphs behind the music. Van Halen's story is also one of many struggles and triumphs. And, you know, nothing else. Eddie and Valerie Bertinelli, well, a high-profile marriage in the height of the MTV era. Their son, Wolfgang Van Halen, is quite an incredible musician. I really enjoyed his first album, and I'm going to, you know, after I wrap up Backbeat Radio, which now be a little sooner than I was planning, I'm going to shut it down in regulation time here and try to hit the mark at 58. Wolfgang Van Halen's pretty cool. I'm going to have to go look up his latest album online and see how it sounds. He's out there touring as well. So you can look forward to the Van Halen documentary. And I also mentioned briefly Hulu and the Sly Stone documentary. That guy is an innovator, musical genius, and it talks about the burden of being genius, or more specifically, the burden of black genius that I'm not really feeling comfortable about speaking to personally, since I am not one who has walked in those shoes, but I understand the creative process that Questlove, the talented director and musician and filmmaker in his own right, talking about some of the pressure that maybe black artists feel and have put on each other in society. So there's a little of that angle too, in addition to the melting pot of people, multiracial, multicultural, multi-influential people in Sly and the Family Stone's band. So that wraps up Backbeat Radio, Word on the Street, whole lot of music news. I didn't think I'd have anything to talk about today, but we somehow pulled it off. I'm Jay Cruz. If you missed the show, enjoyed the show, want to share it with a friend, podcast on demand link. You can listen, download it, or share it with a like-minded friend. We'll be back next month, first Wednesday each and every month, available on demand and all those good things. Until next time, I'm Jay Cruz signing off.